Hello, this is Matt Schlick from the Matt Schlick Live podcast, where I defend the Christian faith and lay out our foundations of the truth of God's Word. Your chosen Truth Network podcast is starting in just a few seconds. Enjoy it, share it, but most of all, thank you for listening and for choosing the Truth Podcast Network.
This is the Truth Network.
Welcome to the Christian Car Guy Radio Show.
I say this calls for action, and now.
Where are your shackles? Where is your sting? Has been defeated. The grave could not hold the
Do you believe in Easter today on the Christian Car Guy Show? How about you, right? Seriously, you. Have you considered it? Do you believe in Easter? Of course, you might know that was a new song that was singing Arise, My Love. But in the very beginning of that, you heard a little sound effect. I know you never heard it before because I mixed it. And I was going to ask Nick, he's my producer, I would think of myself somewhat as a sound artist because I love to sit in a studio and try to create sounds, right? So you can find certain stone movements. You can find all sorts of different, you know, different effects that you can mix together to create one large sound effect. So would you call me a sound artist, Nick?
I would call you an excellent sound artist. Anyway. I've been doing this show with you for a while. You're an excellent sound artist.
So I love to do that, and I love to mix it. And so I come in, and Nick would know this, really early Saturday morning, so I can be, that's part of how I worship. I just sit there, and so I created that. Like, what would it be like? What would it be like to have been there, you know, whatever it was, 2,000 years ago? It would have been a spring morning, right? A beautiful day, I'm guessing. And the birds would have been singing because it's spring there too, right? And it's the time of the singing birds has come, like it says in the Song of Solomon. So I had those singing birds. And then all of a sudden, man, those soldiers, what they experienced was this unbelievable earthquake. You know, Mary and the girls, Mary and Mary, they were all on their way. And all of a sudden, man, there comes this earthquake and this angel. And what did that sound like? Like, just put yourself there for a minute. And how important is that in your life? And all those things that relate to celebrating Easter. And so I'm more than honored to have my good friend Bob with me today. Bob?
It's great to be here, brother. Thanks for having me this morning. I'm very excited about the show today.
Me too. And I have a treat, for a different kind of treat for you this morning. It's called The Story of Edith Easter. I'm going to tell you that in a minute, but before I do that, I should tell you that this has been a really different week for me.
to say the least.
You know, God has given me this tremendous gift of being able to pray a lot and spend a lot of time in what I would call deep relationship with Him in prayer. I love that. I mean, that's a big, huge part of my life. Well, as I, you know, God allowed me to do my show, I started to feel what I thought might be a kidney stone last Saturday morning about 1:30. And it went away, and I did my shows. And I really felt fine as I finished my shows. But is that right after I finished my show, I had to mix an episode of Horns of Light, and I started to do that, and I started to feel that, like, oh, no, oh, this can't be good.
Who's got a knife in my back?
Right. And so I called my wife and I said, baby, We had better go to the emergency room as soon as I get home because I'm pretty sure I have a kidney stone. And timing could not have been better as far as getting home. I mean, getting to the emergency room because, I mean, about the time I got there, it hit like a ton of bricks. And if you've had it happen, you know what that feels like and where you just can't take it. And so, you know, they were there with a plethora of wonderful drugs to make the pain go away. And of course, that started me on a lot of different pain medications on Saturday. But see, I was supposed to preach Sunday, and God had given me this unbelievable message about Palm Sunday. I was so excited to give it. And interestingly, and as I was bent over in unbelievable pain, my wife, you know, had sent out text to our church family. You know, I preach at West Asheboro Baptist Church. And so she'd sent out a text to my brother, you know, everybody to pray for me. And so I got this unbelievable text from one of my church members, and Tammy's reading it to me while I can't take it anymore, right? And it really, I was just like, it was the thing that I knew that came from God. There's nothing, that prayer had to come from God. It just did. And so it really got me through that. Well, interestingly, if I didn't live this, I wouldn't believe it. I woke up Sunday morning, no pain, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm preaching. Tammy's like, no, you're not. And I said, yeah, I'm preaching. And so everybody's looking at me like, no, you're not. And I said, yeah, I'm preaching. And so I got to deliver my Palm Sunday message. I really, really did. But on the way home, boy, I was like, man, this is a long ride from Asheboro to where I live in Stonesdale. And by the time I got home, it was on like Donkey Kong. And it went on all week long, okay? And the reason I mentioned at the beginning of the show is because usually, you know, I get a chance to spend a week with God before I ever think about doing a Christian Car Guy show. I have spent all kinds of time with him telling me what he wants, da-da-da-da. But as hard as I tried to pray because I was on so many pain meds all week, literally every time I'd go to pray, Bob, I fell asleep. And I'd wake up and I'm like, where are you? And I'd begin to pray again. I'd fall asleep. I just fell asleep and I fell asleep. I prayed. I had some amazing prayer time for a lot of other people. But as far as the normal commune time, Bob, I just didn't have it. And so I was wondering, God, what do you want me to do? And I was going to do my devotions at Somerset, the retirement home I do. And I've used this story for years, but I've never really researched it. I always knew the story wasn't true, but I didn't understand the depth of the story till this morning. And so I want to read this story to you. It's called The Story of Edith Easter. It's written by a man by the name of Russell Kelfer, but most people wouldn't tell you that because most of the versions you find of it says author unknown. Well, the author's well known. His name is Russell Kelfer. He was, you're going to like this, Bob. He was a tire guy in San Antonio, Texas. And so this is where the rubber meets the road. Well, interestingly, not unlike some people we know, later in life, God got a hold of him, and he ended up going to Dallas Theological Seminary, and he ended up being a pastor at a church called, I think, The Wayside in San Antonio for like 20 years before he died in 2000. So he lived from 1933 to 2000, and one of his poems is actually quoted by Rick Warren, which we may read after I tell you the story of Edith Easter. But you got to hear this story. Everybody ought to hear this story because I don't think you'll ever forget her opening line and those things that she did. But we won't get far into it, but we'll begin to get the story of Edith Easter. Now, this will probably be a longer version than you've ever heard before because most of the ones, they've cut out all the details. But you see, Russell, although being a pastor, really wanted to be a writer. And so there's phenomenal detail in this story that goes into all these things about the characters that are really kind of important to the story. And so we're to start. It was not your typical doctor's office. Great pains had been taken. I understand doctors don't like to use that expression, but great pains had been taken to create the atmosphere of a family room rather than a waiting room. In one corner, a large TV screen, which dwarfed a row of small chairs, was designed to make restless children feel at home. The idea was to divert their attention, at least momentarily, from the unpleasant possibility that a hypodermic needle full of penicillin might be a part of their fate on the other side of those big double doors. Behind the TV screen was a window which connected to a waiting room, to the business office and a video recorder, which saw to it that the children were watching something edifying and not something too realistic like the emergency room series on hospital shows. Or I can tell you about emergency rooms. Believe me, could I tell you? So tiny headphones at each chair allowed the children to view the likes of Mary Poppins without popping their eardrums or ailing the aching adults or who waited across the way in their own little world, a world that included a plug-in sound system that let them choose their own music. Behind the vine-covered opening with the electronically controlled window was a receptionist, Brenda Carter, who laughingly admitted she was hired because of her knowledge of electronics. Not because she knew an appendectomy from a tonsillectomy. I like that line. Along her appointment sheet was a console switch that looked a good prop like star looked like a good prop from a Star Wars episode. And above her window was a bronze plate that read Will Phillips, MD, General Practice of Medicine. Unfortunately, today was not an unusual day in the life of the family. Today was not an unusual day in the life of the family Dr. Phillips. We'll come back with a lot more. What about you? Do you believe in Easter? 866-348-7884. This is a live show. We would love to hear from you. We will be right back with a whole lot more on Eat at the Easter.
You're listening to the Truth Network and TruthNetwork.com.
Easter today on the Christian Car Guys show, we're talking about the story of Edith Easter. And again, my own personal stone was rolled away yesterday by a wonderful lithotripsy by Dr. Hodge, at Baptist Hospital here. Just a wonderful job that they all did to get me through it, so I feel good today. So when we left our hero, Dr. Phillips, We'll go ahead and pick up the story with, it's Edith Easter. It's by Richard Keffler, and here we go. Unfortunately, today was not an unusual day in the life of this family doctor. Dr. Phillips had been awakened from, believe it or not, a sound sleep at 3:30 a.m. by B. Foster, a widow who'd been troubled for years by a bad back. She awakened in the night, tried to walk, and had fallen and bruised herself badly, requiring x-rays and the works. About 5:15 a.m., when Mrs. Foster was finally resting comfortably in her hospital room and Dr. Phillips was headed from the elevator, he heard the familiar sound of his beeper and immediately knew that another emergency was about to usurp the place on his schedule that had been marked breakfast. This time it was Billy Reynolds calling. His son, Tom, was on the way to the emergency room with what sounded like the possibility of the doctor's 37th victim of a new strain of flu that was a bug that was making the rounds most indiscriminately. By the time Tom was treated and released at 10 a.m. had rolled around and Dr. Will was, as he was respectively called, arrived just in the nick of time to greet an office full of patients who were patiently waiting. As he entered the front door, he always came in that way, so he could greet those who were waiting. His very presence seemed like a ray of sunshine. His 6'3" frame was indeed imposing until you looked into his eyes, and then you forgot how big he was. Those eyes showed an amazing mixture of his strength and compassion, of objectivity blended with sensitivity. It was a look that seemed to say to people, I know what I'm doing, and yet at the same time, I care about what I'm doing as well. It was, as we said, not an unusual day for our family doctor, but he carried unusual burden as he entered the waiting room that Friday morning, a waiting room that was packed. Yet, as Will Phillips' eyes escaped the crowd, he did see a throng of people. He saw individuals, each of whom he cared about a great deal. There was the Perkins boy, Freddie, crippled from birth, and yet not at all crippled in spirit. He was now grown into a strong man preparing to enter medical school with the positive influence Will Phillips had been on his life. There was Miss Mary Fletcher, the school teacher, who so often appeared with a carload of children from the poverty-ridden area where she taught, always paying their bills herself. There was Bill Norris, the drug salesman from upstate, who always had the latest news on the latest cures and whose friendship with Will spanned to 12 years Will had been in the practice. But as he glanced through the room and his eyes moved to the west wall, suddenly his heart seemed to stop beating, for sitting on the edge of one of those comfortable leather sofas was none other than Edith Burns, 82 years old, and without a doubt the godliest woman Will Phillips had ever known, ever had the joy of knowing. There she was, her open Bible on her lap, her hand gently squeezing the hand of a troubled young mother who just happened to be sitting beside her. You can just bank on one thing, she was talking about Jesus. Edith Burns' conversations always centered around Jesus, for Edith Burns' life centered around Jesus. She always had the time, at least always took the time, to stop and tell anyone who would listen that there was only one reason for living, and Jesus Christ was that reason. And you just knew how she started the conversation, too, with a sparkle in her eye and a captivating smile that had become such a natural part of her that the lines on her face had formed around it. She would say, "Hello, I'm Edith Burns. Do you believe in Easter?" Since it was October 25th, that question seemed even stranger than it would have in March. But Edith had found it was an icebreaker that almost always led to the heart of the Christian message, and yet never seemed to be offensive. The knot in Will Phillips' stomach this Friday morning in October, however, was not because Edith Burns was using his waiting room as a fish pond for evangelistic endeavors. That delighted Will. His burden was the result of her lab report he had received the day before. The lab report meant that Edith Burns just might not live to celebrate another Easter of those Easter Sundays that she had so highlighted her life. Will's job this morning was to break her the news that the diagnosis was that her disease was inoperable, untreatable, and incurable, and that the next few months would surely be characterized by a great deal of pain and suffering. He had faced this unpleasant task many times before for a man who was only 38 years old, but none had grieved him like the encounter that awaited him this morning. So the doctor took an abnormally long time with his first three patients. He reasoned that he wanted to give Edith all the time she needed to talk about Easter to all her captive audience in the waiting room. But his real reason was that he couldn't face the prospect of describing to that precious saint the possibility of the pain that awaited her. By 10:45, Will had run out of excuses, and he reluctantly motioned to his nurse, Beverly Thomas, and said, "Bev, send Edith in." A few seconds later, the door opened again, but it wasn't Edith. It was Nurse Timmons instead, with a big smile on her face. "Miss Edith and that Thorndale woman are praying at the moment, doctor," she reported. "I believe in our waiting room is about to become a delivery room again. I think another new birth is taking place." You see, Bev Timmons understood. She had become a Christian herself in one of Dr. Phillips' treatment rooms about 2 years before. She was taking Edith Burns' pulse at the time, and out of the clear blue sky, Edith asked her, "Bev, do you believe in Easter?" "Of course I do," Bev had answered. "I love Easter." "Now lie still, Miss Burns." "Oh, I do too," Edith continued. "What do you believe about Easter?" Oh, Bev would have been annoyed. Bev would have been annoyed, but nobody would have been annoyed by Edith Burns. "Well, I believe it's a day of joy," Bev responded. "Indeed it is," Edith went on. "Indeed it is." "Why is that, Bev? Why is it such a day of joy?" Lovingly, Edith had framed the question after that question that ultimately led to the question in life that seems to give the answer. Is there life after life in your life? She asked lovingly, as Will asked, "Do you believe in Easter, in life after life?" We will be back with the rest of the story of Edith Easter and your questions and comments. Would love to hear them. And Bob Young.
You're listening to the Truth Network and TruthNetwork.com.
Where is your sting? Has been defeated.
Do you personally believe in Easter, right? Do you believe in life after life? You know what? I did a funeral a couple weeks ago, and all of a sudden, that becomes a really critical question when you're really facing the fact that is this person that you're with going to be dead. So this is a fictional story, but it is in its own way a parable. Jesus was a great, great storyteller, in my opinion. The Russell Kelfler of San Antonio, Texas, the tire guy, this is a great story, but it tells phenomenally important truths, especially when people are facing death and those kind of things. These are the things that are going to be on their minds and the things that you have a chance to share. And this is critical stuff. So lovingly, Edith had framed that question that ultimately led to the one question in life that leads to the answer. Is there life after life in your life? She asked lovingly. Do you know for sure about Easter? Well, that afternoon, Beverly Timmons had experienced the reality of Easter and had never been the same since. So the drama had been reenacted in Will Phillips' waiting room was nothing to be taken lightly. So Bev, she knew it was a matter of life or death. But in a matter of minutes, Edith Burns came scurrying down the hallway, Bible in her hand, big bag purse over her shoulder, and a smile on her face so wide it even tested those wrinkles on her godly smile. Is Mrs. Thorndale in the family? Bev asked as she hugged her spiritual mother. Oh my, yes, Edith answered. I completely forgot. She just discovered Easter. You can go out and tell her you're a Christian too, and give her one of these. Edith went on and pulled from her huge handbag that was half purse and half Christian bookstore booklet she had written herself for her newborn spiritual babies. It was entitled Either Side of Easter. And tell her, I'll call her tonight, Edith added. Now run along, child. I must see if this dynamic doctor of ours is spending enough time in the Word. With that, she winked at the young physician as if to assure him she would always be there to look after him, and which didn't make his job any easier. Doctor, Edith began. Will could not so much as open his mouth. You look troubled. Didn't Jesus tell you to be anxious for nothing? I'm afraid you're spending too much time working and not enough time praying, Edith exclaimed. Paul said to pray about everything, and God's peace will flood your soul. You need to get a day alone with Jesus, she went on, thinking you'll be in control of practice instead of your... Then you'll be in control of your practice instead of your practice being in control of you. Edith, the doctor interrupted, just one of us in this office is the doctor. I appreciate your diagnosis. I'll take it to heart. Now let's talk about yours. That came out so fast, Will stunned himself. He was so burdened that he had been abrupt with the very person he was burdened for. Forgive me, Edith, he said sheepishly. I didn't mean to be so sharp, but I do have something very important to talk to you about. With that, both parties were back at their starting gate, and Dr. Phillips began his painful conversation. Edith, he began, we got your test reports back last night, and I wasn't sure what to expect, but the results are more traumatic than I ever imagined. You complain so little about pain and seem so happy all the time. I never expected to see this disease so far advanced. Dr. Phillips dropped his head at that point. Will, are you all right? Edith asked. Bless your heart, son. You don't think God up and made a mistake, do you? With that, the good doctor jerked his head out nearly out of his socket and stared in disbelief at this incredible woman. My, Will, I'm surprised at you, Edith went on. I'm just fixing to rush into the arms of my Jesus, see my dear husband again, worship with all my friends who went and beat me to heaven. I'm about to spend eternity in heaven doing the one thing I love the most, celebrating Easter. And you got a face so long your chin's gonna get run over by a grasshopper. I'm getting sent home at last, and you're afraid to give me my ticket. Shame on you, Will Phillips. Yeah, praise God. An eternal Easter, she went on. How long do I have to wait? With that, the big doctor broke out into a grin himself, relieved that the unexpected turn of events answer almost triumphantly, about 6 months, I'd say, Edith. I'd say you have about 6 months to wait. Suddenly, he, gaining his prospective death, it made so much sense. He was excited. Edith thought for a second, well then, I'd like an appointment to see you at least twice a week, she announced, and at least twice a week. Well, Will interrupted firmly, Edith, I'm the doctor, remember? Now I'd like to see you about twice a week, he stammered. How'd you know that anyway? I didn't, she chuckled, but I need that many days a week in your waiting room to fish for souls. Only the Lord could be so good. A ready-made fish pond and soft leather sofa to boot. At least twice to eat, or twice a week, Edith went on, at least twice a week. Twice a week will be fine, Dr. Phillips replied, just fine. And Edith, his long face beginning to return, there will be pain. Edith said the word actually for him because he couldn't say it. Yes, Will responded, ashamed that he couldn't say it himself. A huge handbag, excuse me, helps when I turn the page and actually have the right page going, Bob. It will be nothing like the pain that Jesus suffered for me, Edith quietly added. Paul said that we must suffer for him if we're going to reign with him. I only pray that my pain might honor him, Edith went on, and that I might never become bitter or angry, Will. I have a good bit of pain already, Edith continued. I thought maybe you did, the doctor acknowledged. And you know what, she added, it caused me to trust him even more. Will, you're a marvelous doctor and a precious friend. Thank you for making this such a special day, she concluded as she rose to her feet. Will had no answer for that. He'd given many patients bad news before, but he'd never been thanked for making their day special by doing so. God bless you, Edith, he blurted out, and that was all that he could manage to say. Well, the next few weeks were like a Pentecost in Dr. Phillips' waiting room. The first week, Edith came for her two visits as expected, but she came about an hour early so she could be sure to talk to somebody about Easter. By the second week, Brenda noticed that Edith was appearing every morning, whether she had an appointment or not. She'd bring in her knitting and a big black purse stuffed with New Testaments and books to give away, and she'd bring a lunch so that she wouldn't have to leave the waiting room when the working woman came in for their flu shots. She'd just spend the day. Brenda asked Dr. Phillips what she should do about it, and he replied, be sure and give her some iced tea to go with her lunch and pray that God will send just the right people to sit on that couch. God has sent a short-term, full-time missionary right into our room, he nodded in amazement. What a great God we have. So on through the Christmas season, Edith Burns sat on that couch with Will Phillips' office and talked about Easter and Jesus, and scarcely a day would go by that someone didn't discover the reality of Easter. Dr. Will's office was closed, of course, for the New Year's weekend, and when they reopened on January 3rd, Brenda kept her electronic window in high gear as the waiting room loaded up with patients. More than those, fewer of those openings were allowed Brenda to peer cautiously towards the sofa on the west wall to see if that amazing lady with the big black purse and the even bigger smile would be manning her post as usual for God's ambassador for Easter. But this day, as the clock on Brenda's desk moved towards lunchtime, Edith Easter, as they had come to affectionately call her, still was nowhere in sight. They had tried to call her house, but got no answer. It was about 2:30 in the afternoon when the phone finally rang. Hello, is this Dr. Phillips' office? I mean, Brenda answered. He's with a patient just now. Who should I say is calling? Well, it's Mercy Hospital. Yes, Edith Burns is our patient. She is. Where? Is she there? I see, of course. Just a minute. I'll call the doctor. Dr. Phillips hurriedly picked up the phone. Will, said the cheery but impatient voice on the other end of the phone. Will, this is Edith. My old body is sending me signals that they're saying, Edith, I think God wants you to tell your Easter story down at Mercy Hospital for a while. I don't want to bother you, so I took a cab, but this young lady in admitting won't let me in without an authorization from a certified MD. Are you certified? You are, Will, right? She chuckled. Tell this nice lady to assign me a room with two beds and tell them to keep sending me ladies for roommates that need to hear the Easter story. And you, Will. Will you tell Bev I'm assigning that couch on the west wall to her? Tell her God's moving me on to new territory. I'm getting closer to home. Well, she whispered, I'm getting closer to home. Well, we hope that we can be able to conclude Edith Easter's story. And how about you? Do you believe in Easter, life after life? We'll be right back. A lot more of that story at the Christian Car Guy Show.
You're listening to the Truth Network and TruthNetwork.com.
Do you personally believe in Easter? That's the story by Russell Kelfer in San Antonio. He was the tire guy before he became a pastor at Wellspring. I love this story. So we'll just pick it up because to make sure and get her done here. We got my good friend Danny Marsh, too, as well as Bob Young in the studio with me here. So I guess it goes without saying that the 8th floor of Mercy Hospital has never experienced anything quite like the presence of Edith Burns. It was obvious she was in a great deal of pain, but you never once heard it mentioned. She only talked about Easter. Weeping endures for a night, she would tell her roommates, but oh, the joy that comes in the morning. Nearly every week, a new patient would be moved into room 824, and nearly always when they left with a song in their hearts and a song planted there by Edith Easter. The nurses soon sensed the aura of joy in room 824, a joy that they couldn't explain. So you'd often find that whatever it is got a little slow on the things got a little floor on the slow on the floor, they would gravitate towards Edith Easter's room. All of them, that is, but one, the head nurse on the evening shift, one Phyllis Cross, who seemed to be perfectly live up to her name, intentionally kept her distance from Edith. She referred to her as the religious nut in 824, and in general seemed determined not to let Edith Easter's story rub off on her. There was a time or two when no one else was available to give Edith her medicine, and Phyllis was forced to go in. But even then, she maintained her icy composure and refused to respond to Edith's cheerfulness without so much as a smile. It was a Monday night late in February, and Edith was taking a turn for the worse. An infection had set in, and her temperature had skyrocketed. Around-the-clock care was ordered, and being two nurses short, Phyllis Cross herself had the duty in room 824. Edith was in great pain and nearly delirious from the fever. But somehow, when Phyllis entered the room, she managed an incredible smile and took the nurse's hand and squeezed it with what little strength she had left and whispered, I love you, Phyllis, and I'm praying for you. Now, Phyllis Cross was one tough woman. She had been a head nurse in the military unit for 11 years and had worked as a head nurse in the emergency room for 16 years before that. She had been through 3 marriages and had lived through several personal tragedies. Her face was hardened by the ravages of time and temper. Her eyes possessed a quality of iciness that indicated that all of life was cold and calculated. Whatever fire of warmth that it might once have been there had long since been extinguished. In all her years on the 8th floor at Mercy, no one had ever so much as shed a tear. Excuse me, yeah. In all her eight years on the floor at Mercy, she had never even shed a tear. But when that dying woman, whom she so avoided, squeezed her hand and said, I love you and I'm praying for you, something inside of her began to melt. The irony of it all was more than Phyllis could bear. Here was a dying woman with no hope praying for her. Somehow it seemed as though it should have been the other way around. But of course, Phyllis and prayer were not on compatible terms. The mechanical nurse, as they called her, sat down by Edith's bed and squeezed her hand. Thanks, dear, but there's no use for praying for me. God gave up on me a long time ago. No, he hasn't, Edith answered her almost defiantly, and I ask him not to take me home until you are in the fold, too. All these nurses look up to you, but you're not the only... All these nurses look up to you, but you're not looking up at all. Oh, I get the well. You've done a lot of living, Phyllis, but you've never really experienced life. I'm asking your God to keep you alive until I'm asking your. If you're asking God to keep you alive until I'm in the fold, Phyllis responded, either he's going to let you down or you're going to have to be the oldest patient in the history of the hospital. Religion has never been a thing for me. I love you, Edith, said Edith again. I love you, Edith said again, and God loves you, Phyllis. Oh, how God loves you. All right, we're getting there. So, if I get the page turned. Phyllis froze, expecting this incredible spirit to toss her out the Easter question at any moment. It was almost as if Edith sensed that, and knowing that the time was not right, she saved that question for the perfect moment. I love you, she said one more time. That Phyllis Cross muttered something as she needed to check another patient as she slipped hurriedly out the door. This woman's very presence was more than she could handle. She had watched patient after patient assigned to the bed 2 of room 824 leave the hospital transformed. She'd seen four of her nurses demonstratively change from spending time with Edith Burns after their shift was over. In fact, the greetings on her floor among the staff were often the hand clasp and even Happy Easter as they were good morning. Something miraculous was happening on the eighth floor. To some degree, it irritated her, yet still sometimes inside of her wonderful this Something inside of her wondered if this delightfully different dying woman did not have the answers that had so eluded her about the real meaning of life. And the stream of visitors that literally flowed in and out of that room, all of them so joyful, and all of them so encouraging, and all of them greeting her with Happy Easter, Edith. They talked about her being the spiritual mother, and many referred to that day on the couch in Will Phillips' waiting room. Something truly remarkable was happening in room 824. The question Phyllis Cross had had to answer was, am I going to be touched by it or avoided at any cost? For truly, she had to work at it to avoid being touched by it. It was late in March when Phyllis Cross couldn't contain herself any longer. Early one morning, just after her shift ended, almost uncontrollably, she was drawn to room 824 before she went home. The streams of sunlight that flooded the room heightened the beauty of the wall, the floor arrangements that kept pouring into Edith Easter's room. But the brightest light that morning was in Edith's eyes. It was almost though she had never been sick. Oh, the pain that was still there. But you seemed to sense that the fragrance of victory made the pain almost no consequence. Good morning, Phyllis, Edith beamed. I was expecting you. You were? Phyllis answered, but she never got around to asking why. Instead, she sat on the edge of Edith's bed and just blurted out, how come you've never asked me about Easter? Well, the godly old woman smiled and squeezed Phyllis's hand. I was waiting for you to ask me, Edith answered, and now you have. Phyllis, do you believe in Easter? I guess I don't, Phyllis Cross replied, at least not the way you do. I've always celebrated Easter, always gone to church. I've given my children Easter eggs. I've always celebrated Easter. Ah, but Phyllis, Edith asked, her big blue eyes literally aglow. You celebrated Easter, but have you ever experienced Easter? Phyllis, do you believe, really believe in life after death? Do you believe your real life is yet to be lived when this life is over? Phyllis, do you believe that the real reason for this life is to store up treasures for the next, treasure of lives that have been touched by yours? Not really, the aging nurse replied, not really. Do you believe in the death of Jesus Christ? Edith went on intensely but gently. Of course, Phyllis answered, almost relieved that she could give a yes answer to something. Then will you read something for me? Edith quickly responded as she pulled out the Bible, so worn to look at it, and test what I can hear the music in the background. I didn't make it, Bob. But I will tell you that, guess what? Phyllis comes to Jesus in a miraculous way. This story in its entirety is at ChristianCarGuy.com. It's there for you to, by all means, use. And, of course, Edith gets to spend her Easter Sunday morning, is found by Phyllis after Phyllis becomes a Christian, with Easter lilies. It's a beautiful story. But the biggest question of all for you that you got to think about on your way home is, do you believe in Easter? Thanks for listening, Bob.
Brother, thanks for letting me be here. I needed that this morning.
This is the Truth Network.